Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today my guest is a writer-director who has a new and delightful horror thriller out called Sting from Wellgo USA, which will be in theaters April 12th. Kea Roach-Turner, you have designed a very, very intriguing movie. You wrote it, you direct it. I'm envious. Tell me more.
I did. I conceived it and wrote it and directed it and co-edited it. So, you know, my hands are all over it. And, you know, if it works or doesn't work, it's my fault either way. That's for sure.
Well, for me, it does work. The atmosphere, the sort of oppressive loneliness of this decrepit building where all, if not more than just the residents, are quirky. Even the non-human inhabitants are quirky.
Yeah.
Got a quirky dog. You got some rats in there. And we have our young protagonist, Charlotte, who's feeling a little out of place because her mom and her mom's new husband have a new baby boy, and she's sort of on the outs. And I'm curious about why a spider, because, you know, this movie was entertaining, but you've also given me new nightmare fuel, so thank you.
My pleasure. Yeah, I am the thing I wanted to do with this was to create a modern fairy tale. So, you know, I wanted to kind of make it about, like, classically almost like a princess trapped in a decrepit tower, and, you know, she's dealing with a new baby being born, and she's being pushed out of the family, which is a classic fairy tale conundrum. All of the characters seem bigger than life because I wanted them to fit into some kind of I don't want to say standard, but like I wanted them to feel like fairy tale characters. You know, that, like, you know, you've got these characters like the warrior and the magician and the evil stepmother and the witch and, you know, the fairy tale grandmother, and, you know, the all of these sub characters kind of fit into one or more of these categories. You know, or the hunter who comes in and saves Snow White. You know, like all of that stuff. And why a spider? I mean, I have intense arachnophobia myself. I'm like a hardcore, dedicated, lifelong arachnophobe. And so the scariest thing that I could think of for a creature feature is a spider the size of a large dog that can bite you, incapacitate you, and drag you into an air conditioning duct and eat you. I mean, what's worse than that, you know?
I did not used to have heebie-jeebies when it came to spiders until I saw a video on YouTube about 10 years ago where this woman is recording a huntsman spider carrying a dead rat backwards up the side of her refrigerator. I'm like, it's in your house? Leave. You know, kill it with fire.
Even just you describing that made me just, I just want to, oh my God, I find it so scary.
And
that's horrible. It
brought truth to the urban legend I'd heard. Yeah, in Australia, all the flora and fauna are trying to kill you. Just stay smart, stay safe. I'm like, what? And then I saw this spider and I'm like, no.
We've got crocs, they'll eat you. We've got great white sharks, they'll eat you. We've got some of the most poisonous snakes in the world. We've got a giant spider called a funnel web that if it bites you, like, you'll die in 3 hours if you don't get to the hospital. They'll kill you. We've got spiders that eat birds the size of a dinner plate. And it's just, it's a great place to grow up if you want to become a horror filmmaker because, you know, you're scared of everything.
Well, I'm going to say that you have succeeded here with Sting. The story is delightful. The characters are believable. Congrats on the evil queen and the mad scientist, because those were awesome. But
Thank you. Well, yeah, I mean, they're archetypes. Yeah, it's meant to be. Yeah, the evil queen, I guess, is the one who owns the building, Helga, and you know, the mad scientist is kind of like this wandering magician type who comes in and tries to help, but you know, can't. And you know, I guess the exterminator would be the hunter who comes in and tries to help the princess. You know, these are all archetypes we're dealing with. I thank you for saying that it worked. You know.
It for me, it worked. I mean, they're so delightful. Even the small parts, their behaviors fit in with what you know, we call as the fairy tale of the story here. And I was also impressed. I'm a fan of practical effects, and the spider itself, Sting, and the meteor egg or whatever that it arrived in gave me memories of the egg from Alien, and I just went, oh, we're going there, nice. so
oh yeah, I mean, I've stolen all my career from Alien. I think it's the greatest horror film ever directed, and also one of the greatest science fiction films ever directed. The fact that it can straddle two genres and be a masterpiece is amazing. Yeah, it was a direct ripoff of that. Well spotted.
So talk about the design of the spider and the practical effects of, let's call it, the gore of how it eats. That you went to Weta Digital for these effects, correct?
Yes. I mean, like, if you're going to do a film like this, you contact the best of the best,
right?
Of the best, and just hope they're available. And luckily, Richard Taylor, who I love, he's one of my favorite human beings. He'd kind of wanted to be, he'd wanted to make a giant spider movie like for years and years and years. So when we contacted him, he was already excited. And then he's like, look, if the script is good, oh, we're going to do this. And he read the script. He liked it. He did know of me. He'd seen, I think, some of my other films, and he just said yes. And as soon as he said yes, I breathed a huge sigh of relief, because I knew that we were going to be okay in terms of the spider. And so, you know, we had conversations, and I didn't really want to change the design of it that much. Like, you know, there was talk early on of like making a monstrous Geiger type spider, which is great. But I'm just like, look, the design of the spider is already horrific. Why change it? And so we kind of went with a classic redback spider, because I feel like, you know, we've had a few giant spiders that were hairy. You know, Shelob in Lord of the Rings, which is something else that Richard Taylor was responsible for, was, you know, like a big fluffy hairy spider. You know, even Arachnophobia and Eight-Legged Freaks, they were more kind of, you know, like huntsmen or tarantulas, big and hairy. I wanted to go with something that was a little more inspired by Alien in a way, because I loved that reflective black exoskeleton that the Geiger creature had. And so the thing that has that is a redback, and Richard loved that. And so we just went with a redback. But, you know, just to add a little bit of flair, we added, you know, basically a monster dog's mouth that has this mouth that can open really wide with, you know, fangs that can, you know, drip saliva. And, you know, Richard loved that too. So, you know, it was just such a great collaboration with him.
Yeah, the design reminded me of the Black Widow, the way its body was shaped. And I'm guessing that's similar to your redback.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Much like the Black Widow, yeah.
So everyone in North America, think Black Widow spider that will eat your face in the night while you sleep. There you go.
I wish that should go on the poster.
So how long did it take to get this filmed, get this made? Because the effects just seem so visceral. And I mean that from I am scared of monster spiders. You did a really good job with this.
Well, do you mean how long did it take to develop, or how long did it take to shoot? Because I think developing, you know, it takes ages, because, you know, I think I wrote it way back in like maybe 2017. I can't remember. And then we shot it in 6 weeks in a studio in Artarmon in Sydney.
Okay, yeah. So no, that's what I was like, how long did it take to get this shot? And was it longer to shoot than it was to get the effects done, or were they sort of like hand in hand?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm an indie filmmaker, so I have to shoot pretty quick. Usually something that would take half a day, like my schedule allows for 45 minutes. And I'm like, whoa, I got 45 minutes to get this shot. It's the hardest shot in the film. And they're like, just do it. And so, you kind of just plan and plan and plan and work with really good people, and you got to shoot fast and get it as quickly as you can. But I just had such a good team, and we had planned really well, and I storyboarded the hell out of it, and we pretty much got most of the big stuff that we planned in camera, practically on set. And post took a while. You shoot really, really quickly, and then post isn't as expensive as shooting on set. So we had 3, 4 months, 5 months to finish everything in post, I think, which is fantastic. And the guys who came in to do the digital elements were just really, really awesome at what they did. So both the practical stuff handled by Weta and a company called MEG out of Sydney were fantastic on set, and then the post stuff handled by a company called Cumulus and Spectrum, which is great too. So I was just very lucky to be given such amazing collaborators,
Now, talk about your young lead and the way you got her to sort of bond with the spider. That to me was a special little twist there, because she is turning to this spider, which she doesn't know is a alien creature, and for comfort, for companionship, because there's no one else in her life to turn to. And this little spider just turns up and goes, "Hello."
Yeah, that was really hard. I mean, the first draft I wrote, it was a pet, but there was no real bonding. All the bonding kind of just went on in her head, and the producers kept going, look, can she bond with the spider? And the problem is I'm arachnophobic, so I'm like, why would somebody bond with a spider? So we had to work out a way to do it, and the way in for us was to come up with the idea of the mimicking sounds. So this is a spider that can mimic the sounds of things in order to bring food to itself. So it can mimic the sound of a crying baby to bring the parents in to eat them. It can mimic the sound of, like a bird so that it can bring a cat, and it eats it. And so it can also mimic cutesy sounds to make a 12-year-old girl kind of fall in love with it so that she will continue feeding it. And so, there was a reason for that. There was a reason for the bonding that was actually a little bit dark. And so you can watch the film and say, oh, the spider's basically making cutesy sounds at the girl so that the girl can feed it. Or you can say, well, no, actually, the spider is falling in love with the girl too. So you can look at it both ways. And yeah, that was a hard one to work out. But after a couple of drafts, we came up with that idea, and it seemed to work. Yeah.
Well, it worked very well, because it put me in mind of how like a baby duck will imprint on the first thing it sees because it thinks that's mama. And
Yeah, and I think I probably stole it from Gremlins now that I'm thinking about it. You know how like Mogwai like kind of sings and it goes, that sound. I was like, I love that sound. So I was like, maybe we could do something like that,
It
So
works.
yeah, we ripped off a lot of 80s movies,
It works. It works. So, did you have to change anything in from the script while you were shooting because, some things weren't working exactly as you wanted them on film?
You always do a bit of that. Like you always have to, shift and move and change. I mean, that's one of the good things about being a writer director. Like you can just do it on the fly and know that it works. But the thing we had to do more than anything was just cut set pieces, just cut chunks out of the film. We had a whole sub character that had to go. We had two or three set pieces, a couple of kills, that we had to lose just because of budget and time, And yeah. But as an indie filmmaker, you just kind of got to do that.
So now I have to ask, will there be deleted scenes when it comes out on Blu-ray? Because I need this. I need your creator commentary. I need your creator commentary on this film.
No, because we used everything. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Because like, yeah, every I wish, I mean, all my other films I think have deleted scenes, but this one was so tight, you know. It's not so much that we cut things out as we just never shot a lot of the stuff, you know, because of time. You know, we needed, you know, minimum probably 8 weeks, but we had six, so we had to just go so quick, you know. It's kind of all in there. But I haven't done a commentary yet. This is the only film that I haven't done a commentary on. I'm gonna have to sort that out. You've reminded me.
Yeah, please, please do, because I would love to sit back with a creator commentary for this movie and just revel in it. So, yeah, we're gonna I'm if you need me to start an email campaign, I will. But this movie is fun. I am recommending people go see it. It will be in theaters April 12th from Wellgo USA. The movie is Sting. Kaya, thank you so much. For your time today and for actually getting this film done. It's a delight. It's a delight.
Thank you so much, Summer, and I really appreciate you talking to me. If you guys don't talk about it, then people don't know it exists. So I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. Again, the movie is Sting from Wellgo USA out in theaters April 12th. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod, the free science fiction podcast brought to you by escape artists.
I rippled a welcoming cadence of light beneath my skin, and then, seeing the newcomer was human, made my best approximation of a smile. Welcome to Helixer Transgalactic Lounge.
Each week, one story told well.
She should have never come back to this God's forsaken junk heap of a space station. But she couldn't help but miss it when she was away for too long.
From the most astonishing and visionary storytellers of the genre.
But because time is a trick of the mind, it can be hacked, and we have gotten good at it. We had to.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on the web at escapepod.org, and on Patreon under EA Podcasts.
Hi, this is Barbara Crampton, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi. Ooh, scary.
Once again, the movie is Sting from Wellgo USA, out in theaters April 12th, so you should be able to see it this weekend. If you have the chance to go see it, please check it out. It's delightful. And when Kaya mentioned that it was a fairy tale that he was trying to go after, it clicked that it totally worked. You've got the princess, the I'm gonna call the exterminators the wandering knights. You've got the evil queen, who's the building owner. You've got the mad scientist, who's the grad student studying creatures in his apartment, and he's the one who sort of realizes that Sting is much more than meets the eye. And of course, you've got Sting, I guess, who could be considered the evil troll in the cave, or the evil dragon up in the mountains. It could be either way, but it fits and it works. If you can go see this in theaters, do so. Even with the the nightmare fuel of a spider the size that this one grows to, it's worth it if you can sort of keep yourself from reacting to the creepy crawling nature. And to stay away from spoilers, there could be more. Just saying, there could be more. But how about you? What sort of creatures, bugs, or other critters are your nightmare fuel, but that you would like to see well done in a horror movie, handled expertly in such a scenario? Let me know. Give me a call. The number is 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also start up a conversation over on Twitter @sliceofscifi or over on Blue Sky @sliceofscifi.com. And of course, just come by the website, leave a comment in the discussion section for this episode. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or on Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review or a rating. That helps get the word out there. Let people know that you're having fun listening to the show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. We are starting to add some more content over on our YouTube channel, so head on over there, find some reviews by Noah and Lewis, and some other fun stuff that we are experimenting with. I think that's the best way to say it. I'm experimenting with different ways to provide additional content for your enjoyment and entertainment. Just head on over to YouTube and look for Slice of Sci-Fi or youtube.com/@sliceofscifi, all one word. I'd like to thank everyone who's currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all the podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep things going around here. So for that, I am grateful and thankful. It makes me happy to know that you guys are enjoying things around here to the point where you are supporting, and that makes doing all this work worthwhile for me. And I keep looking for new things, new ways to add more stuff to give you more value for your donations, more fun, in the long run. So I do accept feedback. Let me know if there's stuff we can cover more of. I am trying to get more coverage of graphic novels, indie comics creators on the show, because indie comics, I've always kind of been a fan of. Those stories are kind of not what you typically find from the big publishers, and some of the smaller publishers are supporters of creator-owned properties. And I will tell you, Vault Comics has put out a lot of really good stories that I've enjoyed over the past couple of years. IDW and Dark Horse have also come out with some really, really interesting stories. If you want to check out an atypical collection, there's an anthology, a horror short story graphic novel anthology on black horror from Dark Horse, came out, I think, around Halloween of last year, called Shook. Go find that. And earlier this year, Dark Horse also released a complete collection of the Fawford and Gray Mouser comic adaptation that was done years ago. Based on the stories, or actually adaptations of the stories by Fritz Leiber. And those stories were near and dear to my heart. And I was fortunate enough back in the day to purchase the reprints of the Fritz Leiber, Fawford and Gray Mouser stories that White Wolf Publishing put out that had covers by this artist named Mike Mignola. So these covers for these fantasy novels showed up. I saw them on the bookshelves of Borders when they were coming out, and I have the first three. Apparently there was a fourth one that I missed, so that's on me for not getting that one. But those covers drew me in to following his comics work over the years. So you never know where book covers and stuff like that will lead you. Anyway, tangent. Horror to fantasy, back to horror. It's all good. But if you want to add your support to what we do here at Slice of Sci-Fi, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi, where you can pick a tier, any tier, and become eligible for perks. Every month, I pick a randomly generated email address out of the hat, or rather, I have this AI bot or computer helper that picks a number, and that number is associated with an email address, and that person gets to choose from either books or DVDs or Blu-rays, 4Ks, from the materials I have here that I used to help prepare for these interviews and the reviews I do. And I just don't have room to keep all of it. So making sure it gets to good homes, fans, friends, and listeners here, is my way of showing my appreciation and hopefully giving a little bit back, because there is some really cool stuff here. And if you want to help support but don't want to commit to a monthly pledge, you can use our PayPal link to donate every now and then. It's paypal.me/sci-fi summer. You can also support by purchasing items through our affiliate shop, which is sliceofscifi.net. All of the links there are affiliate purchases, and I think fun off-the-wall stuff that you might enjoy hunting down and keeping for yourself, because physical media is more important than ever these days. And just as in light of how many shows are being pulled off of streaming so the studios can save money by not paying residuals on them, it's weird finding out that some studios are pulling content and turning it into a write-off. I shouldn't say pulling content, I should say killing projects before they've even aired. The latest one is the Acme versus Coyote, which is a mix of animation and live action from Warner Brothers that was already finished. It was in the can, it was going to be done, and it was killed. And from my understanding of how some of that stuff is, some of the laws are written, or the contracts or whichever, once a studio takes a write-off for a project, be it a movie or a TV series, once they take a write-off, it's gone forever. They can't bring it back 5 years later. Oh, we're going to have a special edition release. No, it's gone. Once they've taken a tax write-off for it, it's dead. It's like it never existed. You can't even go in the vault and revive it, from my understanding. And that's where a lot of the outrage comes from. These people worked to create this movie, this show. And it's just gone. It'll never air again. They'll never get residuals for it. And that should be criminal. We already know it's not ethical, because they're saving money by not paying these people for the work they did. It's horrific. And I'm so disappointed in Hollywood right now. I take that back. I've been halfway disappointed in executive behavior in Hollywood for a long time now. Just saying. Anyway, we do have stuff for you to browse and perhaps purchase over at sliceofscifi.net. Help keep things going around here. Maybe start a conversation about some older shows. Who knows? That'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next time. Take care.